It is Monday, June 30th, the final day of June for 2014, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Karnatz. KUAF is supported by Clubhouse Fitness. Located on Dixon Street in Fayetteville and offering training groups, cycling studios, ergonomic free weights, plus cardio and strength training equipment. Membership information and more available at clubhausfitness.com or call 287-HAUS. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, we say goodnight to iconic locations and events in the city of Fayetteville, plus talk with researchers at the University of Arkansas who were sent around the world by PBS for a national show, Time Scanners. Becca Martin Brown has What's Up, and Roby Brock has this week's Talk Business and Politics update. But first, Governor Mike Beebe has added a third topic to the agenda of a special legislative session starting today. On Friday, the governor announced lawmakers will consider an effort to prohibit the Arkansas Lottery from adding monitor games, in which people can watch as drawings occur every 4 minutes. Spokesman Matt DeCampbell said the governor met with legislative leaders who say they now have enough votes to pass the measure.
That was an issue that had been circulating for a while. There was some question as to whether or not there was enough support in the House. There's always been enough support in the Senate, but the House, we got a number of different reports with different counts, but by today, the governor talked to enough people and had enough assurances that it looks like that if it gets to the floor, it'll have the votes in the House to get out.
Lottery officials have said the original legislation approving the lottery allows the addition of keno games. The other measures to be addressed in this week's three-day session include legislation to avoid a looming hike in teacher health insurance premiums and expanding the number of prison beds in the state. With the 4th of July holiday this week, Arkansas State Police are joining with local departments through the weekend for a special crackdown targeting drunk drivers. Corporal Chuck Lewis says stepped-up enforcement as a result of travel statistics for this time of year.
The 4th of July holiday is one of our busiest and actually has proven in the past to be one of the more deadly holidays. It's the start of the summer vacation. People are taking off to be off with their families, and they get that extra day with the 4th of July. People in a hurry to leave home, get to their destination, and that's what we want to encourage everyone just to slow down, take their time, be courteous of your neighbor, and get to your vacation safely and back home safely.
Lewis says enforcement efforts this week will be taken up by a variety of means.
We've joined forces with the other local agencies and the sheriff's offices for our sobriety checkpoints. We'll be using the low-profile vehicles for monitoring the traffic, monitoring speed and unsafe driving habits, and just out watching for unsafe drivers.
He says in 2012, there were 552 traffic fatalities on Arkansas roads, with just over a quarter of those involving drivers who had a blood alcohol level above the legal limit. A series of appearances by fraudulent health inspectors at several central Arkansas restaurants has led the Arkansas Department of Health to advise restaurant owners across the state to beware of imposters. The department says many food-serving businesses have recently been getting calls from people who say they will soon arrive to inspect conditions at the establishment. Kathy Flanagan, a Department of Health spokesperson, says there have been two main types of fraud reported.
One of them is a phone scam where they call and they tell the restaurant to call back and give this code number. That's probably one of those situations where they're either getting someone to, you know, call one of those numbers that's out of the country somewhere and somebody gets a huge charge for it. That's probably a different deal than someone showing up at a restaurant and saying, "Hi, I'm from the health department. I'm here to inspect your restaurant," when they're not really a restaurant inspector.
She says official restaurant inspectors always arrive unannounced and come prepared with proper identification. It's summertime, and that means that the American Red Cross is stepping up efforts to try and gain more blood donations. Danielle Ray is the external communications manager for the Greater Ozarks Region chapter of the Red Cross. She says the summer months typically see a decline in blood donations.
We see fewer appointments and fewer blood donations during the summer months because a large portion of the population that we get blood from and blood donors from are young people at schools. So obviously there are less people on campuses and both, you know, college campuses and high school campuses. And also people are just on vacation, taking holidays, so it's not a priority for them to come in and give blood. So we just want to remind people that it is still important and we definitely still need it.
So Ray says the Red Cross is running a few different campaigns to attract more blood donors.
Well, we have an initiative right now until July 15th in some of our blood donor centers. We've got a special T-shirt that, you know, is a little incentive for folks to come and give blood. And then also, we're just trying to raise awareness. We've got a 100 Days of Summer, 100 Days of Hope campaign right now that is just reminding people that coming in and giving a donation can really save a life. And it can actually save up to 3 lives because, these, you know, every blood donation can help up to 3 patients. So it's just something just to raise awareness and help people remember that it's still an important thing, and we definitely need people to come in and give.
To find a blood donation center or blood drive near you, visit redcrossblood.org or call 1-800-RED-CROSS. The longtime public relations director of the University of Arkansas at Fort Smith is leaving the university today after nearly 42 years working in higher education. Sandra Lamar began working at the university in 1972 when it was a 2-year community college. During her time at West Ark and UAFS, she has received 44 national, district, state, and local awards for writing, editing, design, broadcast commercials, and more. Prior to her work at the Fort Smith College, she worked at a variety of publications and radio outlets throughout Arkansas. Eureka Springs is getting a nod from Travel and Leisure magazine. The publication recently ranked Eureka Springs among a list of America's favorite mountain towns. Travel and Leisure specifically commended the city's many hotels, bed and breakfasts, Victorian buildings, and trolley rides for making the city a popular travel destination. In sports, former Razorback golfer Stacy Lewis will remain ranked the number one golfer in the world after winning the Walmart NWA Championship in Rogers this weekend. Lewis shot a 65 yesterday to win the tournament. It is her third LPGA victory of the season. Current University of Arkansas athlete Jerrion Lewis continues to have success. This weekend, he finished a second in the long jump at the 2014 USA Championships. The second place finish follows an NCAA indoor championship in the long jump in March and an SEC outdoor title at the conference meet last month. One of the top prospects for the Kansas City Royals is propelling the Northwest Arkansas Naturals lately. Lane Adams went 3-for-4 yesterday with a home run as the Nats defeated Frisco 6-5 in Springdale. The win leaves the Naturals just a game out of first place in the Texas League North standings. The National Veterans Golden Games continue today in and around Fayetteville. Events today include bowling at Fast Lanes in Lowell, horseshoes at Walker Park, air rifle competition at the ROTC building on the U of A campus, and shuffleboard at Fayetteville High School. And the forecast this evening calls for partly cloudy skies with overnight lows in the lower 70s. Tomorrow, Tuesday, partly to mostly sunny with a slight chance of showers, highs from 87 in northwest Arkansas to 95 in the Arkansas River Valley with the heat index of 102. Tomorrow evening, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Overnight lows from 67 to 73. This is Ozarks at Large. The Arkansas legislature is poised this afternoon to attempt to push back against the rising cost of the health insurance program for public school employees in what is day one of a special session. Content partner KUAR's Jacob Kaufman takes a look at what changes might mean for schools and the people that work in them.
For the second time in less than a year, over 47,000 public school employees are facing prospects of a 10% premium hike as a result of reforms. These are people working as administrators, teachers, bus drivers, and cafeteria workers. The 10% rise in cost is much lower than the 35% premium spike projected to take place without any legislative action. In October, the legislature curbed a 50% hike down to 10, but Brittany Brooks, an educator at Franklin Elementary in Little Rock, says 2 consecutive years of double-digit increases make it hard for her colleagues to see this week's action as a solution.
I have met with several of my coworkers that are very upset and are trying to stay abreast of the situation. And then I think there's some that really don't have any idea and probably won't until it happens.
In addition to healthcare costs taking up more of an employee's paycheck, 3 other major tenants prop up the legislature's proposal and actions by the Employee Benefits Division. One change will eliminate coverage for part-time school employees. State Senator Linda Chesterfield says part-timers might find themselves searching for federally subsidized private plans under Arkansas's versions of the Health Insurance Marketplace or Medicaid expansion, both set in motion by the Affordable Care Act. But Chesterfield, a Democrat from Little Rock, says part-timers are still being put in a precarious position.
The problem is we don't know if there'll be a private option, because there are a number of individuals who have been elected that would change that dynamic and therefore preclude it from going forward.
A second major change includes pushing spouses of school employees who can also get insurance through their own employers off of the public school employee plan. The third provision redirects health care-related tax savings from school districts back to the insurance program. The Little Rock School District's chief financial officer, Kelsey Bailey, says that could mean the district losing up to $600,000 a year.
Typically, that's in the general operating fund, so it may reduce some of your supplemental programs that I would call it, maybe some of your after-school tutoring possibility, maybe some of the summer programs. We're unlike a lot of districts in the state. We're the largest, and we're in an urban environment, so we have a lot of special needs.
Republican State Senator David Sanders of Little Rock says even though money is being redirected out of discretionary district spending, the idea is to take money related to health care to use for health care.
The FICA savings that very clearly is derived from the money that the state sends the school district for health care premium, a lot of that is also creating a redirection of funds, but those funds are to go back into the plan to offset a premium increase.
Other changes are coming, including the cost of the cheapest plan, the bronze plan, some decreases in coverage for prescriptions, and limits to some procedures like bariatric surgery, something educator Brittany Brooks benefited from. In the days leading up to the special session of the legislature, Governor Mike Beebe said even with proposed adjustments, underlying problems would still remain. That's something Senator Chesterfield agrees with.
We're going to have legislation to fix the problem systemically, and I'm just not sure that this is the way. I just know that it's going to hurt a lot of folks, and I do know that those individuals who make the least will be hurt the most.
Senator Sanders, who sits with Chesterfield on the task force that drafted the changes, agrees structural reforms to the self-funded plan are needed, but says it'll take time and likely will not come in a comprehensive package.
There are few occasions where there are silver bullet fixes to public policy issues, and this is one. There isn't a silver bullet fix.
The details of what a long-term fix might look like will continue to develop when the task force begins meeting again after the special session. Sanders wants to push for more consumerism and market pressures, possibly lifestyle incentives. Others see a new infusion of money or working with a plan for state employees as the major shift that's needed to bring consistency to people working in Arkansas's public schools. LRSD's CFO Kelsey Bailey.
I don't think it's an easy solution. I think if it was easy, it would have been solved by now. So really, from my perspective, we just want a long-term solution so we're not coming back to the same point next year, year after next.
In Little Rock, I'm Jacob Kaufman.
That report thanks to content partner KUAR News. Prison and lottery legislation are also part of this special session. Still ahead on this edition of OAL, thanks to PBS, the University of Arkansas Center for Spatial Technologies will receive national recognition of an international scale for scanning what could be the number one location for iconic structures in the world, the pyramids of Egypt.
At first, I was trying to be a little nonchalant about being there. This is just another site to be scanning. But when we were doing the Great Pyramid at Giza, I eventually kind of looked up and said, oh, how many people get to be here doing this especially? You know, probably one or two. And this is definitely pretty cool, and it's an amazing structure. And that was actually the fourth pyramid that we had scanned in 4 days, and we were looking basically at the evolution of pyramid building. And when you see the Great Pyramid compared to these earlier ones, and you look at how well it was thought out and built, you realize it's an amazing engineering feat.
We'll talk with just a couple of the U of A researchers working with the PBS series Time Scanners, still ahead on Ozarks at Large.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. A new documentary looks at the pipeline that brings women to the U.S. to work as prostitutes and the Mexican city where many of them come from.
So it's pretty obvious here that everybody knows there's sort of a hidden secret here, which is sex trafficking. Oops, I've said that too loud. I might have said that too loud.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
You can hear Here and Now this afternoon at 1 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
As the Arkansas legislature begins a special session in Little Rock today regarding insurance in public schools, one group is calling for another special session, urging policymakers to allow public schools to connect to a special internet network. Roby Brock has more in this week's Talk Business and Politics update.
Arkansas House members will meet in the historic Old State House during a special session. The current House chamber at the state capitol is undergoing a massive renovation and cannot be used for legislative business. The Old State House in Little Rock was the state capitol before the current capitol location. Governor Beebe's called the state legislature into a special session to deal with funding issues surrounding a public school employees insurance fund and prison overcrowding. Business leaders calling for the state's public schools to connect to a university-based high-speed network hope to have cost estimates by mid-July and would like Governor Beebe to call a special session by the end of this year. Faster Arkansas was formed last year after education policymakers determined that most Arkansas schools did not have adequate broadband capabilities to participate in online Common Core testing or to take advantage of the internet for instructional purposes. Faster Arkansas members are now advocating the option to tie into the Arkansas Research Education Optical Network, sometimes called RON. It's a high-speed fiber optics network connecting the state's public colleges and universities, healthcare providers, and others. Public schools are not allowed to connect under state law. A coalition of broadband providers said the state schools could be served currently under existing broadband networks. 3 months after an announced buyout of a Hot Springs hospital, workforce reductions are taking place in the St. Vincent Health System. In early April, St. Vincent's parent company, Catholic Health Initiatives, acquired Mercy Hot Springs Hospital in the Spa City. On Thursday of this past week, CHI St. Vincent announced layoffs related to the integration process that will affect 91 workers at St. Vincent and 157 positions in total. The Arkansas Development Finance Authority Board of Directors agreed to back $5 million in bridge gap funding for the $1.3 billion Big River Steel Mill project in Northeast Arkansas. At a meeting of the Loan Guarantee Committee on Tuesday, ADFA agreed to make available the $5 million, if necessary, to assure other financial investors in the project that local funding would be secure. Mississippi County, which has committed $14.5 million to the steel mill project, has a timing issue tied to the availability of its funds. Presently, about $9.5 million is sitting in the bank, and the remaining $5 million will be collected before year's end from a local half-cent sales tax for economic development. The ADFA pledge, which will work like a short-term line of credit, assures private equity investors that the money is guaranteed today. State lawmakers began a series of meetings to review and revamp Arkansas's workforce education and training programs this week. Advocates will seek a top-to-bottom review of all job training programs at two-year colleges statewide and a possible realignment of nearly $24 million in workforce training money. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business and Politics update.
Support for Talk Business and Politics on Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T, challenging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More at bankozarks.com. Reading it as a young child, or rather, it being read to me, as many Americans born near or after 1947 probably do. Goodnight Moon, published in that year, was written by Margaret Wise Brown and illustrated by Clement Hurd. It's about a child saying goodnight to everything. Goodnight room, goodnight moon, goodnight cow jumping over the moon, goodnight light, and the red balloon. A new piece of outreach material by the Fayetteville Chamber of Commerce has taken those words and changed them up a bit.
Good night to Fayetteville High School and the Purple Dogs.
Good night, Dixon Street. Good night, Town Square. Good night, Mount Sequoia, and the beautiful cross up there.
Good night, Botanical Gardens, Walker Wilson, and Gully Parks. Good night, Farmers Market, and good night, Lights of Ozarks.
Leaders and people of the Fayetteville community reading aloud from Good Night Fayetteville, a book that highlights the sights and sounds of Fayetteville. The idea actually came from Jennifer Irwin's mother. Jennifer is the director of leadership and external communications with the Chamber of Commerce.
Several cities around the country, there's a Good Night New Orleans, a Good Night Tyler, Texas, Good Night Fort Worth, things like that. So we had seen, or my mother actually had seen Good Night Tyler, Texas, and sent it to me and said, you all should write Good Night Fayetteville. And so I sat down one day and thought of all the popular places in Fayetteville, in and around, you know, in the area, and it was pretty easy to come up with a popular list of the things that we needed to make sure we included.
Jennifer is the official author of the book. Figuring out who would do the artwork and what it would be was the challenge. A perfect fit, 9 different art teachers in the Fayetteville School District donated their time and talents to the cause. The proceeds from the book will actually go back into Fayetteville Public Schools by funding their Leader in Me program, as well as donating funds to the art programs of each of the schools the art teachers represent. Jennifer has been in Fayetteville since college, and as such, she chose to highlight some places that were near and dear to her heart, but she also looked to the city's Visitors Bureau. From Old Main, the Mount Sequoia Cross, to the 112 Drive-In, the book highlights many iconic images of the town, but also some newer ones.
The Chancellor Hotel is probably one of the newer things, but that building, you know, it was the old Hilton. It was, it's been so many different things. And so I would say that's probably the newest thing, but the building itself is old. And then, of course, the trail system, that's not extremely old, that we've had that around for just a few years, I think. And then the town center.
Sounds and events like Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue, the Washington County Fair, and the Fayetteville Farmers Market also receive a nod. And do you remember Bugsy the dog, the canine companion to the late Bruce Walker of Flying Possum Leather on Dixon Street? Bugsy is in there too. The colorful artwork completes the book, with images in pastels, watercolor, and colored pencils. Once the colorful pages have been flipped through, the final pages include an explanation and history of all of the sites inside, making it perfect for the new kid in town. Jennifer says local realtors have purchased the book to give to newcomers to the area when they close on their homes. A children's book, really. Jennifer says she hopes it will entertain kids of all ages.
It is a children's book, and we're calling it a children's book. It says it right on it, and, you know, the illustrations and the language is very, you know, for children. But we hope that people who went to the University of Arkansas or, you know, and don't live here anymore, or who maybe lived here at one point and don't live in this area anymore, will think it's fun to have and will look back and go, oh, when I lived there, when I was in college, you know, I went to the Washington County Fair. I spent lots of time on Dixon Street, went to the, you know, Walton Arts Center and that kind of thing.
And keeping it local and Fayetteville funky, the books are only available at local shops.
Bella Jack's and the Party House, Three Monkeys, Collier's, drugstores have them, Riff Raff, Rick's Bakery. So, yes, all local places and homegrown places, really, when you kind of think about it. The Visitors Bureau, of course, has them, and then the Chamber Office as well.
For more information on Goodnight Fayetteville and the Fayetteville Chamber of Commerce, visit FayettevilleAR.com. This is Ozarks at Large.
Good night, Washington County Courthouse and the old clock.
Good night to the nonprofits and the volunteers who care. Good night, Blair Library, and all of the books that we share.
And good night to the businesses all over our great city. Good night, Chamber of Commerce and all of its committees.
Pianist Karen Kai Nagano and the Cecilia String Quartet perform Mozart piano concertos on their new release together for Analecta. I'm Katie Hendrickson, host of Of Note, Monday through Friday from 11 to noon on KYF. as well as 6 p.m. weeknights on KYFTU. Join me for Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 12 in A Major from Karen Kai Nagano and the Cecilia String Quartet on Tuesday's program.
Tomorrow night, the University of Arkansas Center for Spatial Technologies, or CAST, will receive national attention. The three-part PBS series, Time Scanners, will be shown across the country in July, including Tuesday nights on the Arkansas Educational Television Network. The series centers on a half dozen researchers with CAST and their work scanning some of the most famous places in the world. Atlantic Productions, the producers of the series, sent the U of A researchers to locations like the Great Pyramids, St. Paul's Cathedral in London, and the ancient city of Petra. Last week, two of the researchers, Adam Barnes and Malcolm Williamson, came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to talk about their experiences with Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellams. Adam Barnes told Kyle it all started with a simple phone call from Atlantic Productions to the U of A campus.
Yes, I was sitting in my office and about to go into a meeting with a few other people there at CAST, and my cell phone rang. Didn't recognize the number, of course. I answer the phone, and it's a lady named Laura Acaster from Atlantic Productions in London. And she asked if we were interested in possibly doing some laser scanning for a television documentary that they were planning to do. They had been talking to some private firms in Europe that do laser scanning, and they, I guess, were still searching. They have some researchers who are constantly looking for, you know, some way to improve the show or add on to the show. And they found the CAST website. I assume they went to the staff web pages, and my name starts with a B. I'm at the top of the list. Perhaps that's how they called my cell phone. I'm not sure. But I told her, yes, we would be interested in talking. And we did have a few meetings throughout the next few days. Things moved very quickly from there. And we made a budget. We made a plan for who was going to go. And the first few trips fell through. But after that, we went really fast.
In this initial conversation, was it brought up that it would be the pyramids?
Some of the locations were mentioned, and they were all very interesting locations, to say the least. But we do a lot of travel on our normal type of projects to interesting locations, not always the most well-known locations like this show. Most of the time it's more secluded, but still very interesting to us to go and laser scan and survey a site that we typically go to. But yeah, this time it was big name, very well-known sites that, you know, we never thought we would actually get to go work on. So.
When you do this laser survey, what's the equipment you have and what does it look like and how do you set up?
We typically travel with 8 to 10 cases on a trip like this. So two or three laser scanners, tripods for the laser scanners. A lot of times we have targets that we would set up between scans to help tie things together, and then various other equipment, just chargers, batteries, miscellaneous things.
Computers, yes.
I have this image of what it must look like when you're doing the laser scanning and you're looking at a computer screen. What does it look like?
We're mostly just setting these scanners up, and our newer ones have built-in control panels, and so you can actually just program and set them and operate them from the instrument itself. So you set it up, get it running, and then you go off and do something else for anywhere from a few minutes up to, with our older scanner, up to an hour or even more. So it's a lot of hurry up, set up, and then wait for a while.
So when you're at the pyramids, I mean, this is, when you think of structures, iconic structures, I mean, for many, the pyramids is number one.
I think I would have to agree there. At first, I was trying to be a little nonchalant about being there. This is just another site to be scanning. But when we were doing the Great Pyramid at Giza, I eventually kind of looked up and said, oh, how many people get to be here doing this especially? You know, probably one or two. And this is definitely pretty cool, and it's an amazing structure. And that was actually the fourth pyramid that we had scanned in 4 days, and we were looking basically at the evolution of pyramid building. And when you see the Great Pyramid compared to these earlier ones, and you look at how well it was thought out and built, you realize it's an amazing engineering feat.
And that's brought home even more so with what the laser scanning will tell you?
Yeah, I think we probably have, you know, one of the best 3D models of the Great Pyramid in the world.
How do you not over-romanticize what you're doing? I mean, you're looking at this structure that was built thousands of years ago and is, you know, considered one of the most iconic on the planet.
Yeah, Machu Picchu for me was the equivalent of the Great Pyramid for Malcolm, I think, and in that when you're working on the site and you take a second to just pause and look around, you know, you realize how amazing it is that you're spending 3 or 4 days on this site and being paid to do it. Most of the time when we're working, we're constantly thinking about where to put the scanner, how the scans are going to fit together during processing. So you can't float away mentally too much. You have to stay engaged in thinking about what you're going to do next, especially in this situation where we had very little time, no second chances, a lot of pressure to get a lot of data.
Right. So, in an ideal situation, if you were doing the Great Pyramid at Giza, you'd have a couple of weeks?
Definitely.
And you had a couple of days?
Yep. In fact, really, we had one day, and then we were lucky it was our last location, and we were actually staying basically across the street from the pyramid, and so we were able to talk them into letting us have a few more hours access that day. But it was very, very intensive, kind of extreme scanning.
When you're at the pyramids or when you're at the cathedral or when you're at Petra, is the public there? Is it open or are you there by yourselves?
It is. There are times when we got in early and got to leave late, later than the tourist. But we worked around them and we talked to them. You know, they're always interested when they walk by and see what's happening. And so we explain and eventually we had badges that said National Geographic, and we would just hang those on the scanner, and so people would, National Geographic. And we worked around them. We were friendly with them, and they were friendly with us, so, yeah.
And we say, please don't walk in front of the scanner there.
that would create a problem for the process?
We end up editing quite a few mm-hmm. people out of our mm-hmm. scans.
And the point of this is to create what is called a point cloud. What is a point cloud?
Point cloud is a 3D collection of millions and millions, sometimes billions, of points in a XYZ space. And when you see these all viewed together in software that can display a 3D view, it looks like the surface of the object that you're scanning, the building that you're scanning.
Billions. Points.
Billions. So these instruments, our fastest one does up to 500,000 points per second.
Wow. So then you construct it? I mean, you come back, you have all this information, and do you have to work to put it together?
You do. So you have, in some cases, 50 individual scans, and they all have overlap. So that's one of the things you're thinking about while scanning, is that you have enough overlap to tie these together later. So you bring them into software, you choose 3 common points between 2 overlapping scans, and that is enough to get it closely aligned. And then the software does a best fit, so it goes through and really locks those 2 scans together in a very accurate way. And we just do that repeatedly through all of our scans until we have one large point cloud that normally we would edit anything out that we don't need, and then we would reduce the number of points to get it to a manageable size so that the computer doesn't completely lock up or choke on the data.
We're talking Egypt, we're talking London, we're talking Petra. This is a global event, which means I would have think that the people looking to put this show together could have gone anywhere in the world and they called CAST. That's a high compliment, right? The highest.
We think so.
We think so, yes. We are a member of a pretty small community as far as organizations that specialize in not only laser scanning but other research that allows us to think from a lot of different perspectives. So when the producers of the show are trying to come up with questions, interesting questions about the site that can be answered with the technology, they're not just talking to someone who knows how to run the laser scanner. They're talking to someone who knows how to process the data and has thought about interesting research questions that can be answered with data like this. And so,
and I think the other part is that we're also familiar with the alternatives, And so, you know, is laser scanning the best way? Is it the most appropriate technology for this particular task? Are there other things that we should be looking at instead? In a couple of the shows, we use ground-penetrating radar.
Right.
And we're able to then fuse that data along with the laser scanning data to really, I think, uncover some pretty interesting things. Yeah, as a group, I think CAST is fairly unique in the range of experience and backgrounds that our members come from. And so we, I think we bring a lot of useful perspectives on a show like this.
Does doing this laser scanning at some place like St. Paul's Cathedral or the Pyramids, does it help you the next time you do another project? I mean, is there experience gained here that will stay with you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's always a unique situation that we haven't encountered before. As far as in St. Paul's, for example, there are a lot of interior spaces, interstitial spaces between the skin, the outer skin of the dome and the inner skin of the dome. And they're filled with, rafters and things that are holding everything together. And so we had to work around that. And it was very difficult to work through some narrow passageways and very compact areas. And so that was new. That was relatively new to us, and we weren't sure that things were going to really work. In the end, they did, and it looked really, really nice. So,
I don't want to give anything away from the three shows that will be on PBS and ETN, but did you find out anything that maybe was previously unknown?
I think so. I think definitely at St. Paul's, right?
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And I think we uncovered some interesting things in Egypt. And I think in Petra, we may have found some pretty good insights there as to how some of the structures were actually created there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in each episode, we had what was called Tech HQ, where we brought together the scan data, the engineer, Steve Burrows, and whatever specialist that they had from each site. And we looked at the data, we talked about the questions, and we revealed any findings that we had. And so there were a few aha moments that would raise eyebrows and be of interest to the public, I believe.
You know, what's interesting is what we haven't even talked about yet is that you're going to be on television. I mean, that seems like, compared to what you were able to do, but there were cameras following you. I mean, did that ever make you self-conscious?
I don't know about self-conscious. At the beginning, I think it did, although I have to say that the host, Dallas Campbell, did a terrific job at making us feel at ease from moment one. As soon as we got mic'd up on the first day, he started joking around and talking with us and just made us relax. And then we went on. Really, I think the bigger issue with the cameras and the sound was that they would want us to stop and do things again so they could get another take. And we'd say, please, you're kidding, right?
Do you think you'll be doing another one? Do you think, CAST, or has there been any conversation?
We may be doing some other work with the company. We've been in discussions about a couple other projects. The last I heard was that this particular series doesn't stand a high probability of having a second season unless they can constrain the travel for the show. Perhaps if it was all done within one country or all one region, it would be easier to do. But I think the travel for us, as much as anyone else, was very expensive and really added to the cost of the show.
Any idea what this could mean for CAST? I mean, obviously, you've already got this amazing reputation. You're in that small fraternity, but people are going to see this.
Yeah, they are. I would think that it will hopefully do nothing but raise the reputation or raise the awareness of what CAST does and maybe help to explain what we do, because that's something I have people ask me all of the time. And so, yeah, in that case, I think it'll just make us more recognizable. Whenever they see CAST, they'll know what we do.
I think they do a terrific job, actually, of explaining what it is that we do with the laser scanning. In each of the shows, they give a very quick little explanation of, what is a point cloud. And I think it's probably one of the best explanations that I've heard. And so I think that will be, it'll be helpful for the general public understanding some of the work that we do.
Malcolm Williamson is a research associate with the University of Arkansas Center for Spatial Technologies. We also heard from Adam Barnes, a research assistant with CAST. They are just two of the six researchers who participated and worked to be shown nationally on the PBS program Time Scanners. The series premieres on AETN tomorrow night at 7. A local screening will also take place tomorrow on the U of A campus and will be followed with a question and answer session with some of the researchers. That event, open to the public and free of charge, will begin tomorrow evening at 6:30 in the Ken and Linda Sue Skolmeyer Hall inside Vol Walker Hall. This is Ozarks at Large.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansas Songs.
Down in Arkansas, down in Arkansas.
Our little towns ain't on the map, but they raise boys who shirk and scrap.
Down in Arkansas.
Lifebuoy presents the Bob Burns Show, bringing you latest news of those kinfolk in Van Buren, more doings of the Arkansas Traveler, Mike Jones and his city slickers, and Bob's special guests, George Burns and Gracie Allen. Now, here he is himself, Bob Burns.
Arkansas-er Robin William Byrne was born in 1890 in Greenwood in central Sebastian County. The Byrne family moved to nearby Van Buren in southern Crawford County when Robin was still a toddler.
Well, thank you, folks. Thank you. You know, before I start talking here, I just thought maybe you might be interested in a little sidelight, little interesting sidelight that I heard on the shortwave just before come down here.
As a boy, young Byrne developed an interest in music, particularly in one of the popular forms of the day, the brass band. He was said to have joined Van Buren's Queen City Silver Cornet Band before he was even a teenager. And it was as a young teen that Robert Byrne, who would eventually start calling himself Bob Burns, crafted a custom wind instrument out of plumbing scraps. He'd be identified with the homemade instrument for the rest of his career, the Bob Burns Bazooka.
Where are the two instruments, Bob? Tell me, can you build that thing and get a real pear-shaped tone?
Tommy, when I used to play this thing in vaudeville, I got every vegetable out of the garden.
You want to play something, Tommy?
Well, Robin, how about Sweet Sue?
Oh, that sounds good. You start it out.
Bob Burns was one of the few to master his bazooka, which was a sort of kazoo trombone hybrid. Its rather flatulent tone and narrow range lent itself best to comic interludes. Its sound has been often described as resembling a wounded moose. Bob Burns continued honing his playing of more traditional instruments, as well as his comedy routines with the Queen City Silver Cornet Band and beyond. With the onset of World War I, Burns enlisted in the U.S. Marine Corps, but the bazooka didn't leave his mind. He became leader of the Marine Corps' jazz band while stationed in Europe and made another bazooka overseas, which he sometimes played with the band.
Producers out here, they don't think I'm romantic. But I want to tell you, man, I am romantic. I remember I went with a girl down home one time. I went with her about 4 years, I guess, and finally she passed on to the third grade, and I kind of lost track of her.
After the Great War, Bob Burns bounced between the coasts, seeking to make it in radio or in the movies. He did both. Burns appeared in his Arkansas Traveler character on radio shows hosted by Paul Whiteman, Rudy Valley, and Bing Crosby. Burns became a regular on the Crosby program. In 1938, he hosted the 10th Academy Awards ceremony, and by the time of World War II, Bob Burns was hosting his own radio program and did so through 1947, often with Spike Jones leading his house band. During that war, combat troops had started calling their shoulder-mounted rocket launchers bazookas, an apparent homage to Burns' instrument, which it resembled. New York-based bazooka brand Chewing Gum apparently followed in the wake of all this. Through the 1930s, Bob Burns additionally co-starred in several Hollywood films, with a couple even set in Arkansas. Most often he was comic relief in his country bumpkin character and usually playing the bazooka. One exception was a dramatic turn as a lawyer in 1939's Our Leading Citizen, which Burns later called his favorite role. While most of his humor was rather exploitative hillbilly stereotypes, Burns allegedly parted ways with Paramount Pictures in 1941 rather than appear in a film he thought ridiculed, quote, the people of my native hills. Burns continued to appear in movies through the mid-1940s, including 1944's Belle of the Yukon, where he received top billing alongside Randolph Scott. Truly a man with his hand in all the popular media of the day. From 1936 to 1940, Bob Burns also wrote a folksy newspaper column called Well, I'll Tell You, that was syndicated in more than 200 newspapers at its peak. He also farmed peanuts and was a civil engineer. His boyhood home in Van Buren became a Bob Burns museum, but multi-talented Arkansas-er Bob Burns remains best remembered for the homemade comedy wind instrument he made as a kid, the bazooka. Bob Burns died of cancer in 1956 in Encino, California, at age 65. Here in its entirety, it's Arkansas-er Bob Burns of Greenwood and Van Buren with April Flowers from a radio broadcast from December 1943.
With April showers bring May flowers. Say, that's the cue for my bazooka solo. Let's get going.
From a December 1943 radio broadcast, Arkansas-er Bob Burns of Sebastian and Crawford counties with his bazooka performing April Flowers. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of KUAR and Experiment Station Studios. Associate producer is Keith Merks. For more information, go to arkansongs.org. Arkansongs, since 1998.
It is Monday, June 30th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Karnatz, and with me now, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
We don't generally write about gallery owners in What's Up.
Okay.
But Donna Rife has a new gallery in Bentonville called 225-TWO-25.
I've heard of this place.
And she's got 17, 18 artists now that she's representing, had lots of events. And so we thought we'd ask her why. Interesting question. Mm-hmm. She said, ever since Crystal Bridges was announced, art has become a buzzword in Bentonville. And she thinks 10 years down the road, the local art scene will be twice as vibrant as it is today, a destination for art collectors, a place where everybody has a connection to the visual arts. And she wanted to be in on that. Plus, her brother had an empty building, and she had an art collection that had outgrown her home.
And it's just off the square.
Yes.
Right.
It is at 225 South Main Street. And she has artists from Northwest Arkansas, Oklahoma, Texas, Missouri, Tennessee, and weirdly, Alaska. Open 10 to 5 Monday through Saturday. And you can find out more at 936-6805 and have a very interesting conversation with her about the future of visual arts in Bentonville.
All right. Becca Martin-Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I'm Ed Ayers, co-host of Backstory. Each week on our show, we take on some of history's more perplexing questions. Like, what do you do if George Washington offers you a seat?
If I turn around and I take that seat, I'm treating him kind of like a monarch. And if I treat him like a monarch, he's going to think he's a monarch. And if he thinks he's a monarch, he'll become a monarch, and then we'll destroy the government.
Backstory with American History Guys, where the stakes are always high.
Backstory, Mondays at 1 p.m. on KUAF 3.
The 64th Annual Opera in the Ozarks runs through July 18th at Inspiration Point near Eureka Springs. This festival of fully produced operas is an educational program for singers pursuing a career in the world of opera. Productions include Gianni Schicchi, Suor Angelica, Cozy Fan Tutte, and Into the Woods. Tickets and more information available at opera.org. The Elizabeth Richardson Center presents Beach Bingo Bash July 11th at the U Arc Bowl in Fayetteville. Proceeds will go to purchase multi-sensory therapy equipment for children with special needs. This casual fundraiser will include bingo for prizes, tropical refreshments, and surprises. Tickets and more information available at 872-1800 or online ercinc.org. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Berryville. Ozark Natural Foods in Fayetteville has a couple of events this week. A vegan summer barbecue class will be held tomorrow evening at 6. The class will be taught by vegan lifestyle coach Kat Mendenhall. An artist reception will be held at Ozark Natural Foods Saturday, July 5th from 4 to 6 p.m., showcasing the work of Stephen Krogman. Refreshments will be provided. Krogman's photographs will be on display through the month of July. In June, Smokey in the Mirror entered the studio for a three-day session with some of the finest musicians in Oklahoma. They had 72 hours and three blank tapes, recording 12 songs, including an impromptu one-take version of Bob Dylan's Buckets of Rain. Smokey in the Mirror is trying to raise the remaining funds needed to master, print, and promote this record. You can help by pre-ordering the album and donate to their project to help them get the music out via smokeyinthemirror.com. And let's take just a minute to congratulate Arkansas as they earn another Top 30 Directors Cup finish. For the sixth time in the past 7 years, Arkansas has earned a spot among the nation's top 30 programs in the Learfield Sports Directors Cup. The Razorbacks finished 28th nationally in the final 2013-14 standings released on Friday by the National Association of Collegiate Directors of Athletics. The Directors' Cup is a competition that tracks the nation's most successful intercollegiate athletic programs for their athletic performances throughout the year. Arkansas joins programs around the nation like Stanford, Florida, Notre Dame, and UCLA. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Karnatz. We'll end with a little bit of music from the surf rock band Daikaiju. They'll be performing at Smoke and Barrel Tavern in Fayetteville on Saturday evening. The guys over at the Fayetteville Flyers say don't miss them. Tickets are $5, and you can find out more at smokeandbarrel.com/events. This is Daikaiju's song, Phase 2. Thank you so much for listening, and have a good Monday.